You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Every child has a right to play, but not all playgrounds are accessible for blind and partially sighted children or parents. So how can playgrounds be designed for everyone to enjoy? Well, we're joined today by co-author of The Free to Play Guide, Teresa Casey, to learn more about accessible playgrounds and inclusive play. Hi Teresa, how are you doing?
Hi Amelia, very well. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk about free to play.
Thanks so much for joining us. So before we get started, can you tell us what your favourite piece of playground equipment is, either as someone who knows a lot about playground design or as a child?
Yeah, I think my favourite bit of playground equipment is a simple swing. And I like swings because I've got really happy memories of them as a child, because we had a swing in our back garden and lots of the kids in the neighbourhood used to come round and just swing for hours on this swing, quite dangerously, I have to say. And currently it's my favourite thing because I've got a little baby granddaughter and she's just learning to love playing on swings. So it's got both a memory from my childhood and now a current playful experience.
You can't beat a swing, and there's so many shapes and sizes and swing levels that you can enjoy.
Yeah, that's right. And there's lots of different swings now as well, which is really nice to see in play spaces. That sometimes it's not just the traditional swings that we used to have, but sometimes you get a really nice mixture of swings for children of different sizes and abilities. So that's a really nice innovation that we're starting to see.
And can you give us some background into the free to play guide and how it came about?
Yes, I'd love to. So I have a really strong interest in children's play, children's rights and inclusion. That's gone back a long way, having worked in adventure playgrounds and in lots of different settings around play. And I really believe that every single child has a right to play, and there's no children that should be excluded from that because it's such an important part of childhood. And I guess we sort of look around sometimes at the play spaces and play parks that are available to children and just think, you know, there's lots of children who really wouldn't get much out of playing here. They're maybe very inaccessible or unappealing or don't offer enough for children to have, you know, kind of rich, satisfying play opportunities. So the impetus for the free to play guide came about through thinking, you know, we just really need to do a bit better. And we know that there's lots of groups who are interested in developing play spaces, and sometimes they're not experts. So it might be family groups or friends of parks or community councils or parent councils, that sort of thing, who really want to create better play spaces. And we really felt that, you know, there was a bit of a gap in terms of guidance for what you might do with if you're in that position where you want to develop something a bit better. So myself and a colleague, Harry Harbottle, who has years of experience in children's play, got together with an organisation called Thrive Outdoors, who are a Scottish organisation who support and promote children's play, learning and thriving in the outdoors. And we decided to write this guide about developing and creating play spaces. And right from the beginning, we felt that inclusion and accessibility had to be built in as just sort of a really fundamental part of the guide, you know, not something that's added on at the end. It really became about, actually, if you're going to create places for children to play, then they have to be inclusive, accessible, appealing and attractive places for children right from the very beginning. And that was where we started from.
And as you said, accessibility isn't always at the forefront of people's minds when they're designing play spaces. What are some of the barriers you've come across for both blind and partially sighted children and kind of parents or carers who are blind and partially sighted and want to play with their children in a typical play space?
I think you've hit the nail on the head in a way that if we're going to have inclusive spaces, they need to be inclusive and accessible for all the users of the space. And it's really important that parents or carers or adults are also comfortable as well as the children. So I guess some of the barriers that we've seen are about the ability to move around a space easily and independently. That can be really problematic. So we can have hidden changes of level. Sometimes there's lips and edges that are really tricky to spot and that change. So you might see in a play space, for example, that you have a path with bark next to it, but then the bark level over time drops and you end up with a hidden edge that's just a trip point. So navigating a space, I think, is one of the things that we can think about from the beginning, like how are people going to navigate the space easily? Also, you know, thinking about the kind of visual and sensory and tactile qualities of a space can be really important. So if we don't think about it, we can almost like build in barriers through the sensory environment that make it really difficult. So we make it confusing or difficult to navigate again or understand where you are or pinpoint yourself within the space. But if we think about that more proactively, then we can create a sensory environment that facilitates children's experience and makes it easier for them and welcoming and more comfortable. So that kind of thing. Often when we think about children's play, we can think of two sides of the same coin. You know, we want children to have rich and varied and appealing, interesting play experiences that change, but at the same time, we might want some consistency so that it makes it a bit easier to predict where you are, what's going to happen when you're within a space. I guess fundamentally, we want to make sure that children still have an experience in a space that recognizes that they're a child with innate curiosity and a desire to explore and to play in their own way at their own pace. So there's never going to be one particular set that you can say, if we do these things, it's going to be inclusive for all children. But there certainly are things that we can consider right from the beginning that are going to make a difference to children.
What are some of the more fun, noise-focused or touch-focused aspects of playgrounds that you've come across?
Yes, I've seen some really lovely ones in different places. So I think the natural environment and introducing natural features into a play space can be a really good way to think about enriching the sensory environment, whether that's through plants and the way they smell and touch and move, or whether it's things that you can run your fingers across or things that you can manipulate. So having things like sand areas that you can play within, so that you've got this sort of touch and manipulation through play can be a really nice opportunity. I've seen amazing musical instruments and musical features within play spaces, and I always really like the ones that actually are genuinely well tuned and sound really lovely. So sometimes we get some off the shelf sound equipment that goes into play spaces that doesn't sound that great or doesn't look that great or feel that great, but you can get things that are very fun and lovely. So, for example, I've seen beautiful chimes that are built into paths and you activate them by walking across them, and they're great fun for adults and for children. So you get kind of a chime sound or a kind of pipe sound, like an organ that comes out of them, so they're sort of tooting as you cross them, and that can be really lovely. And also then, you know, sort of also pinpoints where you are within a space. If you know that when you're in this particular area, you're going to hear the peepee pipes as you walk across them.
A really, really fun multi-sensory mental map of the playgrounds.
One of my favourite play spaces is in Dumfries and Galloway. It's a play space called Catherine Street Inclusive Play Park, and they have a beautiful feature in their play space that they built right at the very beginning, and it's a lovely bespoke fence that was made by an artist metal worker, and she designed this fence with input from children who created lots of little designs of bugs and flowers and leaves and things. And then the resulting fence that they put in a section of their play area then has become a lovely feature because you can trail your fingers along the little routes that the metal insects take. There's lots of little flowers to touch. It really involved the children themselves in kind of creating something that, again, like they gives them a sense of place and personality and the character of the space. And I think that's also really important because we don't want to necessarily keep going to the same kind of play spaces that all look and feel the same. It's really nice if we've got play spaces that've got a bit of extra character about them.
And why is it so important that blind and partially sighted people can have this kind of explorative outdoor play with other children?
There's just so many important reasons for being able to play outdoors and with other people, as you say. So on the one hand, we have, you know, just at a very basic level, that play is really recognised as critical to children's overall well-being and development. You know, cognitive, physical, sensory development, all that kind of thing is wrapped up in children's play. It's the way that children are built in a way, you know, to develop through play, and it taps into the innate desire they have to explore the world and to connect with other people. I think it's really important because children really love playing. It's like if we think about our childhood, what do we think about? We think about experiences at play. It's where we made friends and connected with other people, felt a part of the community. And I think that's incredibly important as well because all children have a right to be part of their local community. community and connect with other people. Play spaces do tend to be community hubs or kind of, social gathering spaces. And being part of that is not just a right, but it's just incredibly important for us. And the reason that it's recognised as a right, which it is in the UN Children's Convention, is because of that basic importance that play has for children. So it's not just something that's nice if children get a chance to play, or if we've finished everything else, then it's okay to go and play. We have to really see that children, have a right to play because it's something that's so critically important to their overall health, well-being, development, and happiness.
And for blind and partially sighted carers or grandparents, parents, why is it so key that they also get to feel comfortable and be present for their children in play spaces?
Playing together, we're building bonds and, building our relationship. So I think it's just such a lovely thing about being able to play with your child or your grandchild. Most of us would think, yeah, we should be able to go to a park or a play space and be able to play naturally, and we shouldn't have to overcome lots of different barriers in order to be able to do that. It should be a comfortable place to be. So sometimes when we're thinking about designing play spaces, think about how do we make it a playful and comfortable experience for the adults as well. And if the adult who's taken a child to a play space isn't comfortable, they won't stay very long. And so, if you're sitting there cold or, with nowhere to shelter and not enjoying the experience, then you're probably going to head off for the next thing instead of lingering and playing. And what we know that when children are really immersed in play, they can play for a very long time, and that's, it can be such a wonderful thing. So we do need adults to feel comfortable in the spaces, where they are with their children or grandchildren. So taking that into account is really important. And I think there are quite simple things that you can do. So like having really nice, comfortable seating is a good thing. Having it close enough to where children are playing, having more than one seating point, and remembering that a seat doesn't need to be a bench, there can be kind of perching points. And just again, like being able to understand and navigate the space a wee bit more easily can be a really helpful thing as well.
And where can people learn more about Thrive Outdoors and read the free to play guide?
Yeah, you can find Thrive Outdoors online. Thriveoutdoors.org.uk. You'll be able to find the guide and lots of other resources about children's play on the Thrive Outdoors website.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Teresa Casey, co-author of the Free to Play Guide, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio and talking all about the fun ways blind and partially sighted children can play.
Thanks, Amelia.
This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.